Now, okay, so I published on those things. I have not published on autism causation, although I've given a number of talks on this. And so that's my next discussion is autism, and its causation by both EMFs and chemicals and how they work. This is a figure here of how I think autism works, and I'm not going to talk about everything in this figure, but the basic process, I believe, is the following, that we have both EMFs and various chemicals can act to increase intracellular calcium, and I'll tell you how the chemicals work later on, and that the excessive intracellular calcium in the brain, in the developing brain of both in utero and also shortly after birth, there is a tremendous amount of synaptic formation in the developing brain in humans and in animals at that stage in development. So both late in gestation, the last 3 months, and also in the early life of the child, there are five different mechanisms that control the formation of the synapses in the developing brain. So you know, everything in the brain is dependent on, you know, on the proper formation of synapses between certain neurons and other neurons that they're supposed to respond to. And so there are five mechanisms that are involved in the formation of those synapses. They include the dendritic outgrowth of the neurons. They include synapse formation, synapse maturation, synapse elimination, and also something called MCP2 function, which I won't try to explain to you. All of these things are known to be regulated by intracellular calcium. And therefore, when you have excessive intracellular calcium produced either through EMFs or through various chemicals, you will change this synapse formation. And let me just say, in autism, it's known that the connectivity of different parts of the brain, which is impacted in autism, some things you get more connections. In other cases, you get, and in most other cases, you get less connections, less synaptic connections. So we know that the brain function is impacted by changes in synapse formation, and we know that these processes are very active, as I said earlier, in the developing brain, and that they are all regulated by intracellular calcium. Okay, so we've already talked about how EMFs do this. I want to say I'll talk about how chemicals act as well. And now, in addition to the usual sort of garden variety types of autism that we see, there are also what are called syndromic forms of autism. And these are caused by germline mutations that affect the synapses. And sometimes they affect them directly, and sometimes they affect them indirectly. But they all affect the synapses. But the different synapses in different parts of the brain are different from one another, so they're not all equally affected. And so when you see these genetically caused syndromic forms, they're not identical in their features to the more common types of autism. And those things are caused, but you know, but the point is that EMFs may also, through the action of free radicals attacking the DNA, and I'll talk about that later on, they may have roles in producing these germline mutations in addition to roles on these processes that directly regulate the synapse formation in the developing brain. Okay, so that's now there is clear evidence that that excessive BGCC activity can cause autism. The situation, and this is genetic evidence, there's a mutation in one of these VGCCs. I'm not going to try to explain this nomenclature to you, but it that causes what's called Timothy syndrome, where the channels when they open are very slow in closing, and so you get much higher increases in intracellular calcium as a consequence of that. There are also a number of others. There are mutations in a different subunit of the BGCCs that can also cause a slowing of the channel. There's another one of these BGCCs. It has very low expression in the brain, but nevertheless, when you get, you know, very slow closing of it, it causes symptoms of autism rather than full-fledged autism. And then there's another channel here which indirectly affects these calcium channels, and it also can have roles in causing autism. All of these are genetic studies that clearly demonstrate causation. And let me say, there are also genetic polymorphism studies where more modest increases in activity can cause increased susceptibility to autism as well. So the genetics clearly shows that the BGCCs can have roles in causing autism in this way. Now, how do the chemicals work? And I'm sure, you know, quite a number of you are probably interested in chemicals actions in the body. And these are chemicals that were involved in multiple chemical sensitivity, but they also have roles in lots of other things. And they all act by increasing the activity of the what are called NMDA receptors. And when those are activated, you also get increases in intracellular calcium here. So each of these pathways, and there some of them have like the mercury and hydrogen sulfide act along two different pathways. The organochlorines, the organophosphorus and carbamate pesticides, they all act to produce increases in intracellular calcium and consequently nitric oxide as well. And now it's my opinion that the EMFs are the primary driver of the autism epidemic. Okay. And that that may seem surprising to you. There have been more studies done on chemical action than on EMF action. But that just means they haven't been studied very much. But the reason that it's my opinion that is that the organic solvents, the organochlorine pesticides, the organophosphorus and carbamate pesticides, all of these compounds here, their synthesis went up. There were huge increases in the production of these things during the 30 years following World War II. But that was really before and so there were plenty of these things out there back in 1975. But that was really before the autism epidemic really got going. So that's not to say that these don't have any role in causing autism, but I don't think they're the primary driver of the epidemic. I think the primary driver of the epidemic are the EMFs, and that but they may act synergistically with these, And we already talked about other synergisms with chemicals. So, you know, that's not absolute proof, but I think that's my reasoning for thinking that the EMFs are probably the main drivers of the epidemic. It really has to do with the timing of the autism epidemic, with this huge increase in EMFs that we've been seeing over the last 20, 25 years in our environment. And so that's now. So anyway, so basically what I think is happening is that the chemicals act on this pathway, the EMFs act in this pathway. They both act through intracellular calcium. They both can act to impact the synaptic formation in the developing brain. these things here are things that were discussed in the introduction of my talk, and I'm not really going to discuss them, but I think they're important for understanding what goes on, particularly in autism, in older children, in adults, why it stays around so long and keeps impacting. There are ways, I believe, to get improvements in autism, and there are a number of other people who believe that as well. So I don't think it's hopeless, but I think that we have a good understanding of what the primary mechanism is likely to be here. And so, you know, obviously, you know, one of the issues is obvious, and that is that, you know, our latest figures on autism incidence is about 1 in 34 births, but those are all, you know, those are all 8 or 9 or 10 years old. You know, those are things that, you know, that involve births that occurred perhaps a decade ago. And so the levels of babies being born this year may be vastly higher than that already, based on all the increases in EMF exposures we have. There is reason to think that ADHD is also produced by EMF exposure, and this is based on both animal studies and on human epidemiology. And there's one other thing I want to talk about in this context, and that is something that was discussed earlier by Dr. Boyd Haley. Autism is much more common in male babies than in female babies. When you study syndromic autism, which is caused by specific mutations, you can study it in families where it's passed, where the mutation is passed on to both male babies and female babies in the same family. And what you find is that the autism is produced very commonly in male babies, but not in female babies, or in the female babies, if it is produced, it's much milder. So males are more sensitive to developing autism for whatever reason. Haley has suggested that male dysfunction, which is a very important thing in young males in our society, may be produced by a similar but milder mechanism than what is causing autism. If that's true, and we have male dysfunction fairly commonly in males in their teens and 20s who were born, obviously, years ago, when we had much lower EMFs. So if this is true, what it means is that male dysfunction will inevitably be getting much, much worse based on the exposures we've already had as young males develop over time. So you can see there are all kinds of problems that are where there are highly plausible mechanisms that are generated, and these kinds of things can generate massive impacts. I mean, just one autism child impacts an entire family, and so this is another plausible existential threat, I think, to our survival.